And welcome back to the Freedom for Maryland podcast. Now, this is the first episode of the Marylanders Voices series. This is a new series that I've been wanting to do for really like the past couple months. And it's to give Marylanders, but specifically now because I'm running for Baltimore County Executive, Baltimore County residents to just talk about really whatever issue they want to talk about. It could be something in the news. It could be, in this case, a personal issue that for some reason was not properly addressed. And joining me today for the very first episode is Kimberly Collins from the Edmondson Heights area of Baltimore County. Thank you, Kim, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I believe it was on Monday or Tuesday we spoke at length about your issues. So for the listeners of this podcast, I want them to basically go through the timeline. Now, first of all, if you could summarize your issues for that you've been having for, I believe, the past 3 years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Go right ahead, Kim.
Okay, I'm going to try to summarize this. So I own a house for the past 18 years in Edmondson Heights. I'm the second owner of the home. I had renovations done back at the end. I refinanced my home in December of 2018. Using an FHA 203K. Long story short, the contractor defrauded me. He induced the contract by falsely attesting that his subcontractor, that he and his subcontractor held active contracting licenses. He actually signed an attestation stating this and further certifying that where he was not able to do the work, he would hire only professional, qualified, licensed personnel. That did not happen. I'm going to kind of skip to the major high points because I know we're on a time limit, but he did not, his subcontractor was not licensed. He did not secure or apply for the legally required permits. All of the work that he has performed is defective. He instructed his unlicensed non-electrician subcontractor to illegally install wiring in my new kitchen. And when I started, before I could actually give him the last payment, the work started to deteriorate. The project itself was a nightmare. It took 4 months. So I called him.
And it was originally supposed to be for how long?
They gave an estimate of 6 to 8 weeks. And throughout it, I was complaining. I was complaining to the loan originator, who was also acting as my 203K consultant. I complained to him. I complained to his subcontractor. I would be placated, or if I complained too much, his subcontractor would get verbally aggressive and say, well, it's a big project, you know. But it was a nightmare.
Right.
So
let me fast forward you to when you tried to get a resolution over this shoddy work that was not permitted properly, was not
right.
What happened?
Let me say this. The contract into which I entered with him stipulated that final payment would be withheld for failure to remediate defective workmanship. So when he came to pick up his check, I said, listen, we need to have a conversation. Let's do a walkthrough in the house. And I pointed out all of the problems. And I said, you know, because this has taken so long, these things I can live with, but these things I cannot. At that time, I didn't know that his subcontractor was unlicensed. I did not know that he had failed to pull permits. And I did not know about the illegal wiring and illegal plumbing. So his resolution that he offered was he wanted me to tender payment to him and then enter into a new contract with him to compel him to do the work under the existing contract. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I contacted, you know, my mortgage company. They said, no, retain that check. Do not pay him until he remediates the work. I then filed, I inquired with Baltimore County as to whether or not he had secured the legally required permits, because some of the work, there were things that were going on in the kitchen that I was a bit concerned about that didn't seem right. There was an odor coming from the dishwasher. The lights flickered. And then I noticed that if I had too many things going, it would blow the circuit.
Oh, so I called, wow.
Right. So I called Baltimore County. They said, no, there are no, there's no permits on your property. We're not aware of any work being done on your property. And I said, well, I just had my home renovated and there was work done. They came out, they inspected, they said, yeah, there's definitely a problem. Like even just looking visually, he was able to identify electrical problems. And he said, well, do you want to file a complaint? And I said, of course, yes, I do. So I filed a complaint. And as a result of filing the complaint,
a complaint with whom?
Baltimore County Code Enforcement.
Okay.
As a result of that complaint, I was assessed a $6,200 fine. And I had to go to a hearing. So I go to a hearing. This was in February of 2019. I went to a hearing, and the administrative law judge for Baltimore County issued an order that they were holding me personally liable for the lack of permits and the illegal wiring. They were taking no action against the contractor. The reason that I was given is that because he was not a licensed electrician, they had no jurisdiction over him, so they were coming after me, the homeowner. I was given 30 days to rectify the work, and the judge, I believe it was Judge Stahl, basically told me that due to the illegal and unsafe electrical wiring, my home was inherently dangerous, that it was a liability for Baltimore County to continue to allow me to reside in it. And if I failed to correct the work, they would order Baltimore Gas and Electric to terminate my electrical service.
Well,
yeah. So I actually got penalized for having filed a complaint. The contractor and the subcontractor, they suffered no penalty.
Do they just assume that you were trying to, can I just be blunt, like save money on having somebody?
I don't think so. I had a contract. I had everything, my contract that actually specified that he was supposed to do this.
The right way.
They basically said it is their policy to go after the homeowner.
Wow.
So they don't go after the person who violated the law. They don't go after him for his negligence, for his reckless endangerment. And he has endangered not just me. I live in a row house, so he has endangered me and my neighbors.
Right.
Which includes two small children. And the fact that, right here in Baltimore, we just lost three firefighters who were battling a blaze in a row house. And Baltimore County is aware that this person illegally installed wiring in my home, and they took no action against him. They penalized me.
Right. And, I thought that when I had the last time I spoke with the state's attorney general, Brian Frosch's office, they actually have a consumer protection division.
Well, I contacted the Consumer Protection Division. And I filed a formal complaint, and I was told by the Attorney General's office that they could not take any investigative action on my complaint because my contract with this contractor contained an arbitration clause. So they said they could not enforce Maryland law because two private citizens had an arbitration agreement.
Now, let's go back because I don't think you mentioned this. The FHA, what is that, 203K?
Yes, it's a 203K.
Now, that is a federal program that I believe requires that the contractors be licensed. Is that correct?
That is correct. It requires that the work be performed by a licensed contractor. The mortgage company that I originally used, the originating mortgage company, Contour Mortgage, my initial communication with them was a pamphlet basically saying that they were 203K experts, that you didn't have to worry about what contractors to select because they would fully vet them. And they did not.
Yeah.
So after the contractor signed the attestation, after we entered into the contract, he then had his subcontractor go to the Circuit Court of Harford County. I reside in Baltimore County, but he went to the Harford County Circuit Court clerk, and he secured a construction firm license, which carries the words, not for home improvement. Literally, the document in big red letters has stamped across the front of it, not for home improvement. Yet the mortgage company led me to believe, the mortgage company and the contractor led me to believe that this subcontractor held an MHIC license. He does not and has never been licensed by the state of Maryland.
Now, this story really hit home for me because my father was a general contractor, ran his own business, and he was, I'll just say, he always was getting scooped by unlicensed people, unlicensed home improvement people. So when you told me this, I was shaking my head the whole time because there's good people out there who do very good work, don't cost anymore, you know, and they are losing business to people who don't know what they're doing, shouldn't be doing things, because then it puts people like yourself in this situation.
Correct. Well, the thing that is so frustrating for me is I specifically chose a 203K because it did have these requirements for licensing and it had this requirement for vetting. And in choosing to go that particular route, I believed that I was protecting myself from the very type of situation that I have found myself in. After, you know, back to the Consumer Protection Division, they said, well, we can't take any investigative action because you have an arbitration agreement. I said, well, doesn't the CPA empower you to conduct arbitration? And they said, well, yeah, we can conduct an arbitration hearing.
Oh, sorry. Can you say what CPA means?
Consumer Protection Act.
And that is a state law?
So the Consumer Protection Act, so the state of Maryland actually has a very, very strong public policy of protecting consumers. And the Consumer Protection Act was enacted by the Maryland General Assembly in 1973 as a way to provide consumers with a minimum standard or a minimum level of protections. This is the state standard that all businesses that operate within the state of Maryland must meet this standard. And it contains, it is basically a law against deceptive trade practices. And one of the main provisions of the law is that every agency within the state is compelled to enforce it to the full extent of their jurisdiction. The law states that upon receiving a complaint from a consumer alleging deceptive trade practices, and it further goes on to define what it considers deceptive trade practices. But upon receiving a complaint, the division shall take investigative action. But in my case, they refuse to do so. Ironically, the law also establishes the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's Office. The CPA, or I mean the CPD, the Consumer Protection Division, was established by statute, the CPA, for the sole purpose of enforcing and administering this law. That is their mission. And the General Assembly recognized, or the Maryland legislature recognized, that more and more arbitration agreements are being put into consumer contracts. And for the most part, arbitration, citizens and consumers do not bode well against businesses with arbitration. They're not allow their legal protections, the consumer protection laws. So the Maryland General Assembly basically said, we're going to empower you to conduct arbitrations. And they actually convey that authority under the subtitle of enforcement to make clear that the intent is that arbitration is to be used as a means to enforce the Consumer Protection Act. So I file this complaint. They say, no, we can't investigate. We can't take any action. Yes, we can do arbitration. Both the contractor and I submit to arbitration. We enter into agreement with the Consumer Protection Division to administer arbitration.
Sorry to interrupt, but prior to the arbitration happening, were you aware of the state law regarding the Consumer Protection Act?
Yes, I was. I was aware.
And you tried to compel the state to act, because I'm no lawyer, but I do know the difference between may and shall.
Shall is, it's not granting you any discretion. It is an order. It is saying you shall. It doesn't say you can decide whether or not you want to. When shall appears in a law, it means this is what you're going to do.
Correct.
And the law specifies the division shall. They refused. When I agreed to submit to arbitration, they delayed scheduling a hearing for 6 months. I filed my complaint in August of 2019. I did not have a hearing until February of 2020.
And that's pre-pandemic shutdowns.
Yes. When we do have the arbitration hearing, I had the arbitration hearing 2 days after I had the hearing with the administrative law judge for Baltimore County. So when we have the hearing, I advise the arbitrator of that situation. I advise her that, I am facing the threat of a $5,000 lien. I've been assessed a $6,200 fine. I have been given 30 days to comply with this order, and failure to comply with this order, Baltimore County is going to assess a $5,000 lien against my home. And they are going to order Baltimore County to turn my power off. She was made aware of that during the hearing. During the hearing, the contractor testified that he was not aware that his subcontractor had installed the electrical wiring. He stated, he should not have. He said that the work was of good repair, it was a good repair, and that it met industry standards. I need to back up here for a second, though. When I conveyed to him that I was not going to tender final payment to him, and I also refused to enter into a new contract with him to compel him to correct the work, from the existing contract, he contacted my mortgage company. Now, my mortgage, current mortgage company is not the originating mortgage company. As soon as that loan was closed, Contour sold it to Freedom. So I'm now with Freedom Mortgage. So he contacted the draw administrator at Freedom Mortgage and said, hey, your customer is refusing to tender payment to me. The work is all of good repair. You know, so I'm respectfully asking that you void the check that you sent to her and you send a new check to me. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And he had not included me on that correspondence, which is also required. So the draw administrator forwarded that email to me. And then she included me in her response to him saying, no, we will not do this. You know, the contract specifies that you will correct defective work and that payment will be withheld until you do. You also, your contract also includes a 1-year express warranty. So you're going to have to honor your warranty and you're going to have to correct that work. He then proceeds to reprimand the draw administrator.
Wow.
And to ask to speak.
He's trying to win the popularity contest, isn't he?
Yeah. You know, he basically was like, you know, I can't seem to get any answers from you or any cooperation from you. You know, you forward this, you forward this message to, you know, to Kim, even though I deliberately left her off. Perhaps I can speak with a supervisor. And she's like, no, you're going to deal with me. And no, we're not going to issue another check. And as far as advising Ms. Collins of, you know, your email, she is our customer. This is her mortgage. This is her primary residence. It is appropriate for her to be kept in the loop. And it is appropriate that she be included on all correspondence as she has always been. And as she will continue to be going forward, your solution should be to correct the defective work. So I just had to get that in because, you know, this is not a matter of him having really shown a willingness to honor his contract. So we have the, you know, we have the arbitration hearing and
before you go forward, there's another very important thing that you left out.
Okay.
So at some point, now I'm not sure if it was before arbitration or after, but you actually, well, he was supposed to get a home inspector and then failed.
Well, that was what, well, here's the thing. He is a licensed home inspector. So we have the arbitration hearing and the arbitrator issues an interim award. And in her interim award, she basically determines that he is entitled to payment. She orders that I have to tender the final payment to him because she said that he had not intended to engage in fraud, that he simply did not understand the license, that he and the mortgage company did not understand the licensing laws. I have to pay him. She does not hold him accountable for the defective work because she said that I had waived that right. Places where he breached the contract. One of the terms of the contract was that he would maintain the cleanliness of my home and would not allow construction debris to accumulate. That did not happen. There was so much construction debris that I could not get out my back door. I couldn't get down the stairs. I actually fell down the stairs trying to get over debris on the stairs going into my kitchen. And her ruling was that he had not breached the contract. I had paid for 2 dumpsters to facilitate him honoring that term of the contract. And he never delivered them. And now, he testified.
Was that in addition to the contract that you...
That was part of the contract.
Okay.
That was part of the contract.
2 dumpsters.
Part of the contract was that he was to provide 2 dumpsters. so that he could not allow construction debris to accumulate in my home.
Right.
They were never delivered. He testified that he did not deliver them to my property because had he done so, the neighborhood residents would have filled them in a day. So he put them on his subcontractor's property in Harford County, a completely different county, some 50 miles away. She does not require him to provide. He does not produce any proof that he ever procured them, that they were there. And she says, well, no, you know, he didn't breach the contract. It's okay that he put them 50 miles away and hasn't provided any proof.
I mean, did the unlicensed contractor have a pickup truck or something and he was taking it back? I mean, what was
It was accumulating in my house to the point that I actually went and bought construction bags, bagged it up and put it on my back porch, and it stayed there for weeks.
Wow. That is ridiculous.
At one point, there was a used toilet sitting in the middle of my kitchen. Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. So,
but her order was that I have to pay him because he didn't breach the contract, and she ignores his misrepresentation. She goes into great detail to explain that in 2016, Maryland dropped their subcontractor's license requirement. And while that may be, it does not change the fact that he misrepresented the licensing of his subcontractor. And misrepresentation is prohibited by both the Consumer Protection Act and the Home Improvement Act. The Home Improvement Act expressly prohibits misrepresentation in connection with a home improvement contract. So she pretty much cherry picked that subcontractors don't have to be licensed, but ignores the black letter prohibition against misrepresentation. She completely ignores his misrepresentation, and she ignores any provisions in the contract that were unfavorable to him. She ignored the plain, unambiguous language of the contract. She refused to apply the Consumer Protection Act. She refused to apply the provisions of the Maryland Home Improvement Act. And she issues this award that requires me to pay him and to enter into a new contract with a new contractor to show her the signed contract. And then she would continue to adjudicate to determine how much money she was going to give me as remedy. She refused. Initially, she refused to accept any additional submissions from me. She said they were not ripe for reconsideration. When I asked her to reconsider and to allow me to use the balance of the contract to remediate the dangerous electrical wiring, she refused. In spite of the fact that she's aware I have this unsafe living environment, this man has made my home unsafe. He has created a liability, not just for me, but he's endangering my neighbors as well. And she refuses to allow me, which as my contract and Maryland law allows, she said, no, you have to tender payment to him. So the effect of her order is I'm going to pay him and then continue to live in this unsafe environment. I'm compensating him for having placed me in this very precarious situation.
I've actually seen a home improvement trial happen before in district court. And I can tell you that if the judge that I witnessed would have heard your case, he would have definitely sided on your end. Based now, I haven't heard the other side of the story, obviously, but you did tell me during our prior conversation you hired a home inspector.
So that was part of her order, you know, because I expressed that I felt that, you know, there was probably additional defective work that I was not aware of. I'm not a home improvement professional. So she did grant that, but then he never complied with it. So I paid to have an independent home inspector come in and inspect the property. And his report found that all of the work that Mr. Jenkins did was defective. He basically said that his work was poor at best. Direct quote. He said that as a licensed home improvement, and even more so as a licensed home inspector, that there is no way that he thought that he was complying with Maryland law with the electrical wiring that he put in my home. The current electrical panel will not support the electrical load of the new appliances. And he said there is no way that he could have not known that, being a licensed contractor and home improvement. I have had multiple electricians come in to do inspections, and all of them have said, I do not understand how he did not know that this electrical panel needed to be upgraded. I do not know how he did not know that he needed to secure the legally required permits. It is the non-delegable duty of the general contractor to secure the permits. It's not the responsibility of the homeowner. And electrical permits in Baltimore County can only be pulled by a licensed electrician.
Ah.
So the fact that he did not hire a licensed electrician, nor did he hire a licensed plumber, conveys to me that it was never his intent to secure the legally required permits, because I don't believe a licensed electrician would have done that work without pulling the permits, because again, why would you put wiring into the wall if you know that the current panel is not going to support the load of the of the new appliances?
That is something so basic that I mean, even somebody who's not a licensed electrician should know better.
The arbitrator disagreed. Now, she does hold him, here is the thing, in her final award, she does hold him liable for that. However, she still requires me to tender payment to him, enter into a new contract with her, present it to her, and she will then decide what remedy, what restitution she's going to order. She indicated that she was only willing to grant me $14,000, which is the amount of the final payment. So basically, she's going to give me the final payment, but that will not make me whole. That is not enough to correct the defective work. That's not even enough to correct my kitchen, much less the rest of the house. She also violates the Maryland Uniform Arbitration Act by retaining jurisdiction over the case for an additional 4 months. Now, the way arbitration works is once the arbitrator has rendered her decision, her authority over the issue stops. But she retains jurisdiction for an additional 4 months. So she is basically attempting to enforce her own award, but Maryland law does not convey that authority to her.
Especially not in cases of fraud.
You know, exactly. But the way arbitration works is once you get an arbitration award, it is essentially a piece of paper. You either have to go to court to have it confirmed if you have prevailed, or to request that it be vacated. Now, vacating an arbitration award is very difficult. the courts grant a great degree of, They basically defer to the arbitrator. But as narrow as those provisions to vacate an award are, I believe I have met them. She ignored the plain language of my contract. She disregarded the provisions of Maryland law. She renders a decision that actually contravenes Maryland law. The decision that she issued is the very type of award that the Consumer Protection Act is intended to prevent.
Absolutely.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said absolutely.
You know, so I then, when she issues her final award, I said, no, I'm not going to comply with this, because as bad as my current situation is, I would be in a worse situation had I complied with it. She does not compel him in any way to make restitution. Part of the job of the Consumer Protection Act is also to seek restitution for consumers who have been aggrieved. She wrote in her award that my concern that he would not reimburse me if I go out and I sign this contract, obligating myself to pay a new contractor to correct his work. Well, if he does not pay, what position does that leave me in? Because I incurred a 30-year obligation. Each month, my mortgage that I pay covers the work under that contract. So I'm already paying for it. Even though I do not have a fully operational kitchen, even though the work is defective, even though I have a lien against my home, even though I am endangered, I, like clockwork, pay my mortgage every month. And she is now requiring me to go incur another financial obligation, but she does not compel him to make restitution. She wrote in her award that prior to signing the contract, Mr. Jenkins, the contractor, was required to secure a special insurance policy. Well, that's not true. He was simply required to show proof of liability insurance. But she does not, even though she says, oh, he can file a claim against his insurance, she does not compel him to do so. So I filed a claim against his insurance, and that claim was denied. His insurance company found that he had engaged in fraud by misrepresenting the licensing of his subcontractor. They found that he had been negligent in failing to secure the legally required permits. They found that that the defective work, his policy did not cover poor workmanship. So they denied that claim. She says also in her award that I can then go back to court to try to secure a payment against, you know, from him. Well, in the meantime, I'm having to make this payment. Where is this money going to come from? She literally is giving me no relief. And she is grant, you know, and he suffers each one of his acts, violation of the Consumer Protection Act is a misdemeanor. And there is a civil penalty associated, and there is potential jail time associated. He suffers none of those penalties. He has no civil penalty. He's not found to have committed a misdemeanor. She has essentially granted him impunity. He still has his license and the freedom to defraud the next consumer.
Right. And that I think that's key, because, I mean, obviously your story, your situation is horrible for you, but
what this situation has done, this is my current situation. For nearly 3 years, I have lived in a house that Baltimore County deems unsafe. I lived throughout this entire pandemic with the threat that at any time my electrical service can be disconnected. Every time I'm in this kitchen, if I am washing, I dare not turn on the microwave because it will blow a circuit. So I have to be very careful, because if a fire breaks out behind that wall, again, it doesn't affect just me. It affects my next door neighbor who has two young children. The fact that I know that this exists, if something like that were to happen, I'm now liable because I'm the homeowner. I knew about it. I can't refinance my home. I do not have the money to make these repairs. So I have been living throughout the pandemic in this very precarious situation. Every time I see a BGE truck on my street, I have anxiety, because if my power is turned off, my home is not inhabitable. I'm a federal civil servant. I work from home because of the pandemic. If I have no electricity, this is affecting my livelihood. I cannot, because of the nature of the work that I do, I cannot go to Starbucks or some internet cafe and hook onto their Wi-Fi. My work site has very specific security requirements. So this has the potential to affect me in a lot of different ways. And the response of the Consumer Protection Division is that's strictly conjecture. When I filed a petition with the Baltimore County Circuit Court seeking to vacate this award, because the award, aside from ignoring the language of the contract, ignoring Maryland law, contravening Maryland law, it is also violating my 14th Amendment right to equal protection of the law and due process, but it is doing irreparable harm to me. While I have been fighting this, I am continuing to suffer harm, psychological, physical, financial. So when I filed the motion to have it dismissed, the Consumer Protection Division intervened in opposition of me. So now they're using the court system, they're using the judicial system, not to enforce Maryland law, not to protect Maryland consumers, but to force my compliance with an award that contravenes the very law they are supposed to be enforcing. They are actually going to court to defend an award that renders the law that they were created to enforce utterly irrelevant and useless.
And, you know,
and to me, that's an improper use of the judicial system.
They're siding with the bad person in this case.
Yeah, and when I pointed out in my motion to the court, I pointed out that, you know, they are basically, they're denying me the legal protections that are extended by statute to every Maryland consumer. They have determined that I am unworthy of those legal protections. And the response of an assistant attorney general, she actually put in a pleading that she submitted to the court, was that it is the Consumer Protection Division that is tasked with administering and enforcing the Consumer Protection Act, and their arbitrator has no obligation to do so. So it is her point, it is her contention that the Maryland General Assembly conveyed this arbitrator the authority to conduct a hearing, yet had no expectation that she would use it to enforce the law, even though her authority falls under the subtitle of enforcement. It is the contention of the Attorney General's office that no, she doesn't have to apply the state standard. This is the state standard. The law itself states it is the state standard. She does not have to. She can disregard the state standard and grant this contractor impunity. She can refuse to acknowledge his violation of law, and instead she explains them away.
That is just incredible to me, because this to me is very basic. Like you said, plain language. And obviously, as long as you proved, hey, the work was shoddy, it's putting you in danger, which, it sounds to me
well,
like...
Well, here is the thing. A couple of things. So I am probably, in spite of all of that, I do believe with everything in me that the law is on my side. However, I don't think I'm ever going to get in front of a judge to be able to argue my case. I'm not an attorney. I cannot afford an attorney. I make too much money to qualify for any type of legal aid, but I don't make enough money to have an extra $20,000 or $30,000 that it's going to cost to hire an attorney. So what this has done is it has set a precedent that justice is not available to consumers unless they can afford to hire an attorney to compel a state agency to enforce the law.
I don't understand why. To me, this seems like a case that should be, and I know it's, well, I think you said technically it's criminal law. If there is jail time attached to one of these laws?
No, it's still civil. No, this isn't. I here's the thing. I'm not an attorney. So.
And neither am I.
So I'm assuming that it is still civil law.
Okay.
He committed a crime, but it is, he didn't kill anybody.
Right. Well.
As long as there's not a fire.
Let's put that aside. I look at cases. Now, this is a whole different section of law here, but I'm just using as a reference. Family law. If you have an issue with child custody, what have you, you are usually provided an attorney in some way, because I guess in this case, it's protecting the interests of the child. But for me, this is protecting the interest of the consumer.
Well, here is my concern.
And I'm saying that the government should be on your side. You shouldn't be put in the situation of having to hire an attorney when we have this large amount of tax revenue that should be able to cover these situations.
Well, here's the thing. Quite honestly, I do not believe any consumer should have to go out and hire an attorney to compel a state agency to enforce the law that they were created to enforce. And what has happened is, because I can't afford an attorney, and the division knows that, the Consumer Protection Division knows that, Mr. Jenkins, he doesn't have an attorney as well. And he doesn't really have to have one, because from my perspective anyway, the Consumer Protection Division is providing him with taxpayer-funded legal counsel. Back in December, the Assistant Attorney General filed a motion to have my case dismissed due to a technical error that I made. I'm sorry?
The Consumer Protection Division filed for a case dismissal?
Yes. At this point, Adam, I am not in litigation fighting the contractor who defrauded me. I am at this point fighting the Consumer Protection Division for the legal protections that are extended by way of the Consumer Protection Act to every Maryland consumer. They have refused They have refused to enforce that law. They refuse to take investigative action. Their arbitrator has refused to apply it to my case. The assistant attorney general is saying she does not have to. And they have intervened in my case, coming before the court, asking the court to confirm an award which contravenes Maryland law. They're not intervening, asking, hey, make sure that the law is applied. They're not intervening to protect Maryland consumers. They are intervening, asking the court to force my compliance with an award that denies me the legal protections of the Consumer Protection Act and the Home Improvement Act. That is what is happening.
That's just, I mean, what are we paying these people for?
I will tell you, you know, I am trying, I'm really trying to take the high road in this situation. You know, I don't want to devolve into, you know, attacks on, you know, what someone is doing and what they should be paid for.
Right.
I agree with you. No.
Well, let me be that person. Let me just be the person to say it then.
No, let me just say, I don't disagree with you, okay? But I'm trying to take the high road in this and to focus on the facts without it being related to a particular person. And
right, because I know how they're, you know, it is, because as you said, you're a civil service worker, so you understand there's multiple layers in a given organization.
There are, and here is the thing, you know, this is the thing that really bothers me about this, is that with the exception of me, everyone who, well, myself included, because I am a federal civil servant, but everyone involved in this case is in a position of public trust. Now, the contractor, and this is the reason I believe that they are taking this action, in addition to concealing the true nature of his subcontractor's licensing, in addition to not pulling the legally required permits, he also concealed the fact that his primary occupation is not as a home improvement professional. He is actually a captain at the Harford County Detention Center. He's a correctional officer. And in my opinion, he used his license to secure a contract for an unlicensed contractor. He did not perform any of the work. He did not supervise the work. He did not come to the job site throughout the entire duration of the project.
Until he wanted money, right?
Until it was time to tender payment. You know, one of the things, one of the clauses of the contract is that he would supervise the work and the work of all personnel. The arbitrator determines that he did not have to be on site and that he had not breached that term of the contract because he testified that he spoke to his subcontractor by phone every night and that was sufficient for her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm so serious. I am sorry. I'm trying to take the high road here, but I will say,
oh my goodness,
if an irrational arbitration award ever existed, this is it. She is actively advocating on behalf, and she's supposed to be a neutral magistrate. This arbitrator was appointed as a neutral, but she is actively advocating on his behalf. And it is my belief that they have done this because they do not want him to suffer the consequences, not just of his violation of Maryland law. They also don't want him to suffer the consequences of his duplicity. This man gets up every day and he puts on a uniform and he goes to the Harford County Detention Center where he oversees the incarceration of those who have run afoul of the law. yet he feels that it is his entitlement to violate the law with impunity. And the Consumer Protection Division is endeavoring to grant him that impunity. And I'm simply the collateral damage of those efforts.
I mean, we could never say for sure, but I mean,
that's my opinion. That is my opinion.
There has to be some kind of underlying reason as to why this arbitrator...
I mean, it's either that or there's an undisclosed... Here's the thing. It's either that or there is an undisclosed relationship, but... It is certainly not because he did not violate the law. I mean, he very clearly, it is an irrefutable fact that he misrepresented the licensing of his subcontractor.
Yep.
And the law does not convey to the arbitrator the discretion to explain away or to justify his misrepresentation, nor does it convey to her the authority to ignore it.
It really sounds like she was coming up with every kind of little petty legal excuse to not hold him accountable for being a bad business person at the very least.
Yes. Yes. You know, and here is the thing.
And that's my opinion, by the way.
Well, Adam, let me, and I receive that. But let me just say this. You know, when this started out, all I wanted, you know, I simply want it to be made whole. I'm not trying to go after this man's livelihood.
And this was back when in the when did the legal, all right, so the work
will... He finished the work. He started the work in January.
Well, I don't want to say the word completed.
Well, I'm going to say completed. You know, for lack of a better word.
Okay.
We signed the contract in December.
Of 2018.
The work started the first week of January of 2019. He did not finish the work, or the work was not finished until the end of April of 2019.
Oh, wow. Now, I assume there may have been some snow days in there, so that's...
No, it was a situation where... They would send one person. Well, they came in, they did the demolition, they demolished, you know, demoed my kitchen, they did the demolition, and then they were gone for a couple of weeks.
Oh. So it's then not, they so came it's not back like those, it's not like those reality TV shows where they do everything.
No. then throughout that time, they would send one person. That person would come, maybe spend 3 or 4 hours. They would do one task and then they would leave. And then maybe a couple of days later, somebody else might show up. Very often, I did not know who was going to show up. I would just look up and there would be this person that I hadn't met saying, oh, yeah, Chris sent me over to, you know, work in the bathroom or to work on the flooring. You know, when I would complain about that, I'd be told, oh, it's a big project. At one point, he had fired several people because they had done damage on another project to another contract, you know, another customer's home. You know, and the arbitrator actually attributed, you know, she's like, oh, in response to Ms. Collins' complaints, he fired some of his workers. No, they were not fired as a result of work that was done here. They were fired because the plumber did not do the plumbing fittings correctly, and it flooded another customer's home.
Oh, wow.
That was why he got fired. Another of his workers he fired because he said he was stealing tools.
How did you find out about this?
From conversations, you know, like, well, why isn't anyone coming? You know, and he's like, oh, man, I'm having personnel issues. You know, I had to fire Luke. Or, yeah, you know, and I'm really upset with Shannon because Shannon didn't turn off a water valve and it flooded someone else's home. And, you know, I had to get my guys over there. And I'm like, OK, but in the meantime, I'm going into my third month without a working kitchen.
Right. When it should have been finished by like the first week of March at the latest. Right.
And to understand, this was not, there were no structural changes. This was no moving walls. This was the entirety of the project, they were putting new appliances, new cabinet, new countertops, new flooring in the basement, new carpeting upstairs, okay, six new windows, and a storm door. That was the extent of the project.
That was it?
4 months. And it took 4 months.
Well, hold on, though. About the electrical, how did that get into the mix?
Well, because the house, so my house was built in 1954. I am the second owner. When I bought this house, it was everything in the house was original. There was one plug on the wall where the appliances was to be installed. So in order to install the appliances, you've got to run electrical wiring. Now, initially, he testified under oath that he was not aware that there was a need for any electrical work. When I produced and provided the arbitrator with emails where he and his subcontractor and I were discussing the electrical work in the kitchen, and he wrote, oh, okay, well, Chris will get it done one way or another. So he's acknowledging, but he has testified under oath that he was not aware of any electrical work being done. Well, when I produced those emails and said, well, here's the conversations about it, he said, oh, I didn't lie and I didn't perjure myself.
I have to tell you,
I forgot the conversation.
This, you know, I do video work. That's my main video and photography. And, you know, one of the key things we do is pre-production. And, you know, this is...
They came over and they did a walkthrough before we started doing anything.
Right.
They did that.
And at that point, they discussed electrical work, too?
Yes, because on the... So on the
original...
This is
prior to money being finalized.
Prior to... So on the original bid, it included replacing the electrical panel. When we did the original bid, we were waiting for the appraisal to come back on the property. So we did not know what the property was going to appraise at. So the lender said, hey, put together a list of all the things that you would want, with the understanding that some things would need, you know, may need to come off depending upon what the appraisal came back. On that was replacing the current electrical panel. I knew that it needed to be replaced because it is the original electrical panel.
From 1954?
Well, yes. Yes. So when the appraisal came back and we knew that we needed to take some things off, I said, well, here's the thing. The number one priority for me is the kitchen, because the kitchen was the original kitchen from 1954 and it had not aged well. Okay. So I said, the kitchen is the primary. That's the primary thing. And when he revised his bid and removed things, he removed the electrical panel. And I said, no, the electrical panel needs to be upgraded. And he goes, no, since you're not putting in central air, then we don't need to upgrade the electrical. And I said, but there's only one plug. He goes, no, it's fine. We don't need to upgrade the electrical. There were conversations. So on his advisement as a licensed home improvement professional and as a licensed home inspector, we removed the electrical panel. Well, now I know that he moved the electrical panel because he wasn't intended to hire a licensed electrician. And he then installed wiring. So all of the wiring on the lower level of my house is on one circuit. So every one of my appliances, to include the stove, the refrigerator, the dishwasher, the microwave, the washer, the dryer, and all of the lighting on the bottom level of my house exist on one circuit.
Wow.
That is a fire hazard.
Yes, it is.
But the arbitrator says he's entitled to payment. And what has happened is I have stayed in this situation for almost 3 years. And finally, I said, you know what? This has become untenable. It's not good for my, you know, I'm taking a huge risk. He's turned my home into a liability because the lien on my home grows by 1% each month. Each month, I incur more debt.
Now, the lien was through Baltimore County?
Yes.
And now, I know that there was a fine. So, is the fine and...
There's a fine and a lien.
So, that's
there's a $6,200 fine, and there is a $5,000 lien, which grows by 1% each month.
Now, how would that lien get removed? You just have to pay it, or...
So, yes. You can't just pay it. The work... They will not remove the lien unless the defective work is remediated. So, what has happened is... it has placed me in a, basically it has made my home a liability and a prison. I'm locked into this home. So I decided last month that enough is enough. Safe, secure housing is a basic human right. I make a very decent living, not enough that I can go out and spend $30,000 to fight this, to hire an attorney to help me. And unfortunately, no attorney will take it on a contingency basis. So I have elected to sell my home as is because I can't continue to live like this. So my house is now under contract. I am selling my home at a substantial financial loss just to get out from under it because it's a liability.
Because the people that buy your house are going to have to get this repaired.
Right. So when the sale, so I'm supposed to go the 9th of March is my closing date. And basically the cost of the lien and the fines will come out of my proceeds. So I'm selling the house at a very reduced rate because it needs all of this work. I'm selling it as is. So I'm not getting top dollar for it. But in addition, whatever proceeds I get from that sale, Baltimore County is going to get their money before I ever get mine. The cost of the fine and the lien has to be paid off in order to sell the house. So as part of, so the title company will make a check out to Baltimore County to cover the fine and the lien.
Mm.
And all because you
did the right thing.
My home.
You did the right thing. You reported what was going on. Right?
Yes. And it is because the Consumer Protection Division has refused me. Now, had they applied the Consumer Protection Act, the Consumer Protection Act has provisions for me to get restitution. But as it stands, she does not award me any interim relief. I cannot file a claim against the guarantee fund. I basically, you know, so at this point, I'm going to continue to fight this court case with full knowledge that I probably will not prevail. I'm very much David going against Goliath. And in this story, I don't think that David is going to prevail. You know, but I'm talking to you because... the damage to me has been done. You know, I certainly hope that, you know, I'm made whole, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope because not because the law is not on my side, but because I lack the funds to lawyer up and fight the Consumer Protection Division.
Right. It's
so, you know, but my thing is I'm talking to you and I want to put it out.
What you're saying right now is the same reason there was a newspaper that they actually struck one of my YouTube videos because I basically pointed out what they edited out of one of their videos, and they edited something very important out that changed the context of the story that they put out.
Oh, I'm going to tell you about changing context.
Well, and then the other thing that this reminds me of is the reason why I didn't take a certain governor to court in 2020. It was because I just simply can't afford a lawyer to do so, you know?
Well, here's I'm going to make two points. The first point, you know, you talk about changing the context of something. In her award, the arbitrator, in trying to establish that no fraud had occurred, she quotes from an email that I had sent to the contractor, where I was confronting him about, you know, this was before we got to arbitration, where I was confronting him about, you know, him having deceived me and defrauded me. And it was approximately a 2-page email. And she quotes, when she's saying no fraud, that Mr. Jenkins didn't intend to engage in fraud, she actually wrote, Ms. Collins herself acknowledges as much in her email to him, and she cites the date where she writes, I don't believe Kevin was the loan originator. I don't believe Kevin was part of some nefarious plan to con me. In fact, I don't believe you initially set out to do so either. And I wrote those words, but she ignores the very next line where I say, however, I do believe you knew your subcontractor was required to be licensed, and I believe Kevin helped you to circumvent that requirement. She omitted everything in a 2-page email except for that one line where I said, I don't believe Kevin was part of some nefarious plan to con me.
You know, that's some kind of thing that I've heard TV news or even radio, they'll do that. Like they'll interview somebody for an hour and then use 10 seconds from the whole interview completely out of context.
And you know, and that's the thing. Unfortunately, you cannot necessarily control your own narrative when other people are, you know, intent on distorting it.
If they cherry pick it.
You know, but here is my thing, Adam. You know, I'm talking to you, and I'm essentially talking to anyone who will listen. And it is because the damage to me has been done. You know, it's going to be a grind, but I'm going to recover from this. You know, I'm going to sell my house, whatever money I get left, I'm going to pay off bills. I'm going to live in an apartment for a while. And at 58 years old, I'm going to start to rebuild the life that I had built for myself that the Consumer Protection Division has destroyed. However.
Oh, and I should say from a local standpoint, you're getting out of Dodge. You're getting out of Baltimore County.
Yeah. You know, here is the thing. My knee-jerk reaction is to put Maryland in my rearview mirror. Now, I'm not from Maryland. I'm actually from Birmingham, Alabama. And when I decided to buy a house, you know, I've been living in the DMV for more than 30 years. When I decided to buy a house, I came to Baltimore County because Baltimore County and Baltimore City are the last two bastions of affordability, you know, in the DMV. And I know that both of those jurisdictions have been actively trying to get people who work in DC to invest in this area. And that's what I did. You know, I invested in a blue collar working class neighborhood and I planted roots here. And those roots are being ripped. The life that I built for myself is being destroyed. So my knee-jerk reaction is, I don't want to be part of Maryland. But at the end of the day, change doesn't affect by running away. You can't affect change by running away. So I'm not going to stay in Baltimore County because I work in D.C. So quite honestly, if I don't own a home in Baltimore County, there's kind of no reason for me to be so far away from work,
right?
You know,
especially with how bad traffic is.
Right. Well, you know, one of the silver linings of the pandemic is, you know, I work from home most days. I'll be working from home 4 days a week once the federal government, you know, comes, you know, once we get back to our new normal. But, there's really no reason for me to be in Baltimore County. And quite honestly, I feel that Baltimore County has helped to fail me.
Yes.
Every agency that I have reached out to has either refused to assist me or has done me additional harm. And that is very sad, you know. But I talk to you. I will talk to anyone who will listen, because I'm single. I don't have children. I cannot imagine if I were a single mother going through this. I can't imagine having my children live in this house. I can't imagine if I were an elder, I were a retiree. I kind of feel that this case, you know, this is a very arbitrary enforcement of the law. And I believe that the Consumer Protection Division is using my lack of legal knowledge and my inability to afford an attorney as a means to railroad me out of home ownership. No consumer should have to go lawyer up before filing a complaint with the state agency. You know, and I have reached out to, I wrote emails to every senator in the state. I've reached out to my delegate. I have reached out to the media. And really no one has helped me. You know, I've had some people who have offered some very limited help, but when I asked for a follow-up, I was dismissed. Unfortunately, the way that our legal system and our government is set up, legislatures are not allowed to intervene in cases before the judiciary. So what that has done is, for all intents, my elected officials can't help me. The people that I voted for to help me, they cannot help me. They can't intervene on my behalf.
Which is insane, because they're the ones that set these laws. I mean, I'm not saying that
that's the sad thing. Now let me say there is one senator. I'm not going to put that senator's name out there, because again, I want to take the high road. But there is one senator who, while unable to intervene, has been observing, has reached out to me, has expressed interest and concern for what has happened to me, has tried to encourage me. But the thing that is very disappointing about this situation is that our legislatures, I wrote them and I made them aware that there is misconduct and there is dereliction of duty and refusal to enforce the law, and misconduct and abuse of authority, and nobody has done anything. You know, the Maryland General Assembly is in session right now. Nobody has brought this up. Nobody has done anything, you know. So I'm actually asking, you know, I'm officially asking that Maryland legislators strengthen the consumer protection laws, strengthen the laws so that, and make it clear that, you know, there needs to be accountability for a public official who refuses to enforce the law.
Yeah.
There needs to be accountability for abuse of authority and abuse of authority. And I'm sorry, in this case, malfeasance in office.
I mean, I just try to, every time I talk to someone like you, I try to put myself in their shoes. And I mean,
it has been traumatizing.
I did go through my own court case a long time ago. It was for a lot less money than what you are dealing with. And I can tell you, there's been times where I'm not, I'll just put it this way, I'm not myself. And
you know, it's very interesting. The owner, the sellers or the buyers of my home, they came by the other night to talk to me, and we're kind of trying to work out the, you know, the final details of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband asked me, he said,
how are you so calm? And I will tell you the same as I told him, because I am utterly exhausted. I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
I am utterly exhausted, and I'm traumatized, and I am profoundly disappointed. I'm disappointed in every agency that I've touched. I'm disappointed, especially with the Attorney General's office. You know, I voted for Frosch, you know, and I have agreed with a lot of the actions that he has taken in the past. But for him to be aware, and I wrote him a letter and said, hey, you know what? You know, the people of Maryland, we're trusting you to look out for our best interest. And the response I got was, you know, hey, because your case is pending, I can't take any action. I can't intervene. When I put in a official complaint that the arbitrator was exceeding her authority and engaging in misconduct, I received a message that basically said, you agreed to conduct your arbitration through us, and the fact that you disagree with the arbitrator's decision is no reason for us to intervene. And they completely ignored
my
points about misconduct. It is, we're going to ignore the contractor's violation of law. We're going to ignore the provisions of your contract. We are going to ignore the misconduct of our arbitrator. We're going to ignore anything that does not support this action that we are doing. My other point is this. If the Consumer Protection Division believes that their arbitrator has done nothing wrong, and they believe that they have extended to me the full measure of the legal protections that Maryland law affords to its citizens, then why are they intervening in my case, attempting to have it dismissed?
That is a great question.
You know, because you're not intervening because you're enforcing the law. You're intervening to force my compliance with an award that contravenes the law. And you're not arguing points of law. You're trying to get my case dismissed on a technicality. Now, here's the thing.
You know, but before you go on, I want to point something out that just came in my mind. This reminds me of how hard insurance companies fight so that you can't get claims on them.
And that's what it feels like. It feels like it's this circular, you know, it's this circular argument that I'm getting from them. We're not going to acknowledge your allegation of misconduct. We're just going to surmise that you disagree with the award. And here's the thing. I do disagree with the award, and I disagree with the award because it was procured by way of corruption. And if not outright corruption, most certainly misconduct and abuse of authority. The assistant attorney general is abusing her authority. She's using the authority that the legislature gave her to enforce the law and protect consumers. She is using that authority to obstruct my efforts to seek vacature of an award that contravenes the law that she took an oath to enforce.
Putting that aside, how about just, you know, being a decent human being and looking at the situation, you know, from through your eyes. And again, I want to point out,
well, not even through my eyes, through anyone's eyes, because I'm sorry.
I'm
for
saying
you
in this case specifically, I'm saying,
right. But for her to write in her award, she acknowledges the unsafe living environment. She acknowledges the illegal, unsafe wiring. She acknowledges the order that my power may be shut off. And she decides that I am not deserving of a safe place to live. Because that's what this award,
this award says. This award says, yeah, he has endangered you through his negligence and his deception. But it's more important that he gets paid than it is for you to have a safe place to sleep. That is what that award conveys to me. When you're saying, yeah, I know you're in this very unsafe environment that he created, but for me, it's more important that he gets compensated than it is for you to use those funds to make sure that you have a safe place to rest your head. That is what that order says. That's the message that it conveys.
Setting aside all the state law and everything, let's just go to the contract. There is an express warranty in that contract.
Yes, there is.
The arbitrator should have, you know, kind of compelled him. Hey, like, you know.
No, any provision of the contract, any clause in the contract or term of the contract that was unfavorable to him, she simply ignored, to include the condition that failure to remedy defective work would result in withholding final payment. My contract specifically, in very plain, unambiguous language, states that. Maryland law provides for that. She disregarded them both, and she issued her own brand of justice. And under her brand of justice, him walking away with a pocket full of my money is more important and more just than my having a safe place to rest my head.
Would you mind naming this magistrate or arbitrator?
Yes, her name is Bonnie Sullivan.
Okay.
Bonnie Sullivan is the
Bonnie
arbitrator.
With a B.
Bonnie Sullivan.
Okay.
The assistant attorney general is Sandra Small.
And this is through the state government?
This is the office of the attorney general's office, the consumer protection division of the attorney general's
office. Okay, state government. Okay.
And here is the thing, you know, normally, you know, the attorney general's office is who you go to complain about other agencies or other public officials. If you have a problem with any state agency, you know, any state agency, you go to the attorney general's office. Well, when it's the attorney general's office that is engaging in misconduct and is causing irreparable harm to you, who do you go to? And I've not been able to discover that. I've not determined who that is, and it certainly is not the legislature, you know, and I don't, let me just say, while I am disappointed that my elected officials have not taken action, I also don't want to shift the focus to them, because there are some parameters within which they have to operate, you know. Senate ethics rules prevent them, you know, separation of the branches of government. They can't intervene in a case that is before the judiciary.
Right.
However, I do believe that they, as the General Assembly, can say, well, you know, we are aware that this is happening. Let's address the misconduct of this state employee. Let's change the law to strengthen it, to be very specific about what policies, because here's the thing. If the Attorney General's office has a policy of not investigating cases that have arbitration agreements, the law doesn't state that. So where's the written policy? If they have decided that I'm not entitled, you know, because the arbitrator in her award implies, you know, she says, recently, Ms. Collins has been invoking her rights under the CPA. Well, no, I invoked my rights to the CPA when I filed a complaint with the division. When I filed a complaint with the Attorney General's office, that was invoking my right. That is what the law specifies. So her saying that I did not invoke my right to the legal protections of the state standard feels to me much like I am being asked to correctly guess the number of jelly beans sitting in the jar on her desk.
Right. And that's it. It almost seems like they set people up to get taken on a technicality, even though
and that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're not arguing points of law. They are trying to have my case. So here's the technicality. Again, I'm not an attorney. So when she issued her interim award, I petitioned the court for vacature. That petition was denied, and my case was dismissed because the award was not final. Now, in order for a court to confirm an award or to even adjudicate an award, they don't have jurisdiction over that award until it is final. So because her award was interim, the judge had no choice but to dismiss it without prejudice, and he ordered her to finalize her award within 30 days. He was like, okay, well, I don't see any reason that you can't finalize this award, and I would ask you to do it within 30 days. In 66 days, she issued what she titled a final award. But that award also was not mutual, final, and definite. And the court cannot, just like they could not confirm or vacate the award when it was interim, they cannot confirm, the court cannot confirm an award that is not mutual, final, and definite. And by mutual, final, and definite means that she has adjudicated all issues that have been put before her. And she's signed her name to it and wiped her hands of it. That is the way arbitration is supposed to happen. Well, under her award, she retains jurisdiction for an additional 4 months. So what the assistant attorney general is coming before the court asking is that they confirm this award, which contravenes Maryland law, which prejudices my right to the state statute, and allows the arbitrator to retain jurisdiction for an additional 4 months, during which time she's going to continue to adjudicate the issue. But because the award has already been adjudicated, has already been confirmed, it denies me any right of appeal. That is violating my 14th Amendment right to due process. Their refusal to apply the state standard. This is a law that is conveyed to every Maryland consumer, apparently, except me. Well, that is also a violation of my 14th Amendment right, because the 14th Amendment says that you can't have a law that you enforce sometimes for some people, and other times other people are denied it. You have to convey to the citizens equal protection of the law. So if this is the state standard and you are arbitrarily refusing to apply it simply because, as the attorney general says, the assistant attorney general says, the arbitrator is not an employee of the division, but her authority is derived from the Consumer Protection Act. And that authority is conveyed under the subtitle of enforcement. So yes, she does have a legal duty to enforce the CPA. And the fact that my agreement to arbitrate that I entered into with the division specifies that her ruling would be guided by Maryland law. Her ruling has not been guided by Maryland law because she has disregarded the law.
Well,
but I'll never get in front. I do not believe that unless there is an attorney out there who will either provide me with pro bono, low bono, or take this case on a contingency, the reality is that I am not going to prevail because I'm not an attorney. I don't know the rules of civil procedure, and I'm going up against some of the best legal minds in the country. And while they may be, or at least in the state, And while they may be the best legal minds, I do question their moral turpitude, because there's nothing legal or moral about what has happened to me. I have been stripped of my asset, my home, my wealth, generational wealth. I have been endangered, and there's no recourse for me. So I talk about it because I want people to know, you know, it's like you're using the private nature of arbitration to harm citizens. I'm going to pull back that veil, and I want people to know what they are doing. And I challenge every legislature, address this. Not just because of what happened to me. What has happened to me should not happen to anybody. As a citizen of this state, I should be able to, with confidence, that I will be treated fairly and equally, appeal to my state agencies to enforce the law. And I shouldn't have to be denied those legal rights simply because I cannot afford an attorney, because that sets a precedent that if you lack economic wealth, then justice is not something that's going to be attainable for you in the state of Maryland. That is the precedent that this award has set. And quite honestly, the systemic nature of the misconduct leads me to believe that this is standard practice for the division. I do not believe, while I believe I'm a very unique individual, I don't believe I'm so unique that I'm the only person that this has happened to.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because many years ago when I dealt with the circuit court and the district court in Baltimore County, you know, I'm, like I said to you before, I'm a videographer, photographer, and I said, I would like to reach out and maybe put the message out there. If anybody has, you know, had any dealings with these two specific judges who presided over my cases, I would like to hear from you. And I put this message out on Craigslist multiple times, and each time it was flagged. I was trying to make a documentary to hear if there was anybody else who had problems with these particular judges. I found that to be very funny. Not funny, haha, but funny, strange.
Ironic, yeah.
That these would always be flagged. Almost as if there's someone in the county government who is paid to make sure, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. I don't want to, you know, for the sake of my sanity, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories or anything like that.
Me neither, but at the same time, what I'd like for, have you ever heard of the Robing Room website?
No.
Well, I found that out later on.
Actually, yeah, I did. And I have, let me just say, for the last 3 years, you know, every attorney that I have spoken to has asked me, you don't have any legal knowledge. And I'm like, no, clearly I don't. But for the last 3 years, I have studied profusely, because having to represent myself, I've had to educate myself as much as I can. But again, I can't go toe-to-toe, you know, arguing points of law with an attorney general or an assistant attorney general.
Right.
You know, I'm an IT person. I'm a techie. I'm not a lawyer, but I should not have to. I should not have to be.
All right. The government should protect you. Just like if you were to be, to me, like I think I said this to you earlier, not earlier today, but earlier the other day, like if somebody vandalized your property, you don't have to hire a lawyer to go after that person. The government has a lawyer who, you know, defends you.
Well, here's the thing. Here is the thing, and here is the distinction. I did not expect the Consumer Protection Division to protect me, Kimberly Collins. I expected the Consumer Protection Division to apply the law and to protect me, the Maryland consumer, the Maryland homeowner, the Maryland citizen. You know, this was not a
Kim Collins versus Jonathan Jenkins situation.
Right.
This is the law. And for me, the arbitrator's job was very easy. Here is the plain, unambiguous language of my contract. You don't have to interpret it. It does not require interpretation. You know, it says the contractor shall. It makes very clear what his obligations are. The law is very clear. So you simply look at the evidence. You look at the state standard for the minimum protection of consumers. And you say, did he engage in any of these actions that are prohibited by Maryland law? And if the answer is no, then you cut him loose and you say, no, he didn't violate the law. If the answer is yes, then you hold him accountable according to the provisions of law. But she refused to even address the consumer protection.
It's shocking to me.
So I wasn't asking her to protect me. I was asking her to apply the law.
Right. And we're not talking about, we're not talking about putting somebody in jail over this. We're just simply talking about.
Here's the thing. When this all started, the only thing I wanted, I said, I want him to pay for these fines and liens, and I want my money back. That's all I wanted.
Well, which we're talking about the full thing or just enough to cover?
I wanted the full thing. If all of the work is defective, if the new kitchen, if everything has to be gutted down to the studs to expose the electrical wiring, yeah, I want my money back because I've got to get somebody to come. I've got to get somebody to come and rip all this stuff out and correct it. When I tell you every bit of work is defective, down to the point that one of his workers accidentally shot a nail gun through the glass panel of my front door. And they put the door back together and put the glass panels and held it with wooden strips and plumbing caulk. Oh, I'm so serious.
And left it that way. What?
The entry door of my home is not a standard size door. It's an oversized door and it has decorative panels. It's a custom door. His subcontractor destroyed the door. The door is like, I just wonder at what point is the door going to fall apart. The storm door that he installed literally is falling off the house. That's how bad this work is.
Just from like a couple of years ago.
I'm sorry?
Just from like 2 years ago.
Yes.
Or three years ago almost.
Oh, the work is continuing to deteriorate. So the cost of remediating it now is probably greater than it would have been 2 years ago because it's in a more deteriorated state.
Plus, what happened? The cost of lumber and everything went up.
Right. But here's the thing. The door to my house is oversized. So what he wanted to do, his solution was, rather than to replace the $5,000 custom door that his subcontractor destroyed.
Oh, no.
He wanted to go to Home Depot and get a commercial off-the-shelf standard size door and reduce the size of the opening to my home to accommodate. He wanted to replace a $5,000 door with a $500 door. And the arbitrator felt that that was reasonable. She's like, do you really need a $5,000 door? I mean, he's offering you a door.
Really? She said that?
Yeah. And my thing
my goodness. That's like I'm sorry, but we're photography people, so I'll just say it like this. It's like saying, would you like to replace your Nikon D5 with, with a little,
disposable camera?
It's like a D800 or something like, or not a right. D800, you know what I mean?
Or, you know, for layman's terms, you know, somebody who's not a photographer, you totaled my Porsche and you're going to replace it with the Kia.
Yes, that's perfect.
You know, so a lot of it, you know, and I also believe that the fact that, aside from the fact that he's a correctional officer, I believe the fact that I am a Black single woman
residing in a predominantly Black working class neighborhood led the division to believe that they could successfully deny me the legal protections that the state extends to me.
You just reminded me of something. So they thought you would give up eventually.
Yeah.
But,
from what I understand.
But you have lineage that traces back to a very historical time.
I will simply say I am from Birmingham, Alabama, and my last name is Collins, and I was born in 1963, 1 month after the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. So, you know, my siblings, my older brothers and sisters are much older than me. My siblings marched with Dr. King. My siblings carried with them, a few of them, scars from police dogs and water hoses. I have, you know, so yeah, I do have a lineage in the civil rights movement, you know, and that is part of the fabric of who I am. That's part of my DNA. So no, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep fighting, but not, you know, again, not just for myself, but for those people who are voiceless.
Right.
You know, and again, it is profoundly disappointing, that I'm even in this position. It's disappointing that my elected officials are powerless to help me. And it is disappointing that, while there are a couple who would want to help me, the vast majority, their silence and their lack of action, you know, most of them I did not even get a response from. The ones who did respond to me basically said, according to your address, you are a constituent of Senator Sidnor. But my point is, I would hope that every senator in this state, every legislator in the state would want to know that the laws that they so diligently enforce and so deliberately, I mean, that they so diligently enact and that they are so deliberate about them, and the reason is supposed to be to protect Maryland citizens, I would think they would want to know that the agency tasked with enforcing those laws is refusing to do so, or are doing so in an arbitrary and discriminatory way.
I would like to know that if I were an elected official.
You know, so I will say, of all the senators that I reached out to, there is only one senator who has seeing me as a real live human person and has expressed concern for me as a person. I'm not a constituent. I don't even live in the senator's district, you know, but I'm not a constituent. I'm simply a fellow human being who is being treated unfairly.
That's how I see it. I like I said, please put yourself in Kim's shoes. You know, all you tried to do was improve your quality of life, and the opposite happened.
Right. You know, and quite honestly, you know, as you know, in addition to being a civil servant, a federal civil servant, I'm also a photographer. And, you know, part of my tagline is, I'm just a sister trying to live. I'm just out here trying to live my life. You know, seriously, you know.
No, I like that.
I'm simply trying to live my life. You know, I get up every day. I work. I take care of my 14-year-old dog. I take care of my property. I, you know, I don't have children of my own. But on my block, in my neighborhood, I am called the mayor because I'm that neighbor that I mother everybody's children. If I see your child doing something they're not supposed to do, I'm going to intervene. A couple of summers ago, I literally put my body between a group of young Black men and the police because I did not want to see bloodshed on my front yard. You know, the police were literally fighting with a young boy in my yard. And I took a day off to go to court and to testify. You know, I wrote letters of commendation to the police officer's captain because I wanted them to know that his officers exercised a great deal of restraint. But I also wanted to say to this judge, this is a 16-year-old boy who is not fully developed emotionally, and his judgment is not fully developed. So I'm asking you not to ruin his life over a youthful indiscretion. You know,
What was the outcome of that case? You don't have to say names or anything, but
He ended up getting probation. He got probation. You know, the police officers who patrol my neighborhood are the same police officers. And, you know, while I am very adamant in my stance against over-policing and police brutality and police abusing their authority, I also don't want to live in an environment where there are no police. So, you know, I personally have a good relationship with the police. You know, I have a great relationship with my neighbors. Even before the pandemic, I worked from home. So I'm around when everybody else is at work. I'm around and I watch. I'm not that neighbor that I'm going to watch your house getting broken into and I don't say anything. And for the most part, you know, I walk my dog through the neighborhood. So, you know, this is my home. This is where I planted roots. But come March 9th, I'm being stripped of it.
That's a shame.
I'm being stripped of home ownership. And for someone who grew up in an all-Black housing project in Birmingham, Alabama, to a single mother, household, public assistance, for me to move 800 miles away to become a federal civil servant, to buy a house, to plant roots. You know, if you want to get into respectability politics, I've done everything that society says that I'm supposed to do. Yet I'm being stripped because the Consumer Protection Division has deemed me unworthy of the state law that would protect my rights.
I think people need to know what's going on. And I really do believe that a lot of people on the, we'll say the judicial side of things, they tend to operate. I'm not going to say all of them, obviously, but some of them operate in the shadows. And, you know, for example, the Maryland legislature, everything they do is basically public record from their hearings to, you know, the bills themselves. So we know what they're doing. We know what they're doing.
There's transparency.
There's transparency. There's accountability on the judicial
end.
I'm hoping
that there's accountability in this case. I really do. You know, as I said before, you know, 2.5-3 years ago, I simply wanted to be made whole.
Right.
Now I want accountability and I want the laws to be strengthened so that no other citizen goes through what I have gone through. You know, and here is, you know, there has been a lot of very bitter irony that this case has. You know, a few months ago, you had the Attorney General Frosch, issued a call to action to the legal community, asking them to volunteer their time and to offer pro bono services to stave off this avalanche of evictions that they thought were going to come about, you know, because this pandemic has put people in a very precarious financial situation. And you've got people who are losing their homes. You have people who are living in very, very precarious situations. And in his call to action, he actually
goes into explaining how the average citizen doesn't know the legal system. They don't know how to navigate the judiciary. I believe he said something along the lines of, they don't speak the language. Yet under his leadership, I'm being denied any type of protection. I'm being forced essentially into homelessness. I mean, I'm selling my home and I don't yet know where I am going to go. I have no family in this area. And that's happening because under his leadership, the Consumer Protection Division has denied me the protections of the CPA. So I just find that to be a very bitter irony that you're issuing a call to action to prevent people from losing their homes, yet the Consumer Protection Division is essentially forcing me to lose mine. Now they will say, oh, we didn't force her to sell her house. And they didn't. I could have continued to live here in danger, unable to pay for it, with a lien that continues to grow, risking my life every time I run an appliance.
And your livelihood.
And my livelihood. So, you know, it was either I remain in this very untenable position, or I say, you know what, I'm going to let this house go because he has made it into a liability. This place that used to be my home is now a liability. So I'm going to release myself of that liability. And at 58 years old, I'm starting over.
Yes, start. And you mentioned earlier about generational wealth, and I really think that's probably the biggest shameful thing, because how many years did you have left on your mortgage? Was it 12?
Well, I had, in refinancing it, I pretty much had started over, but I've lived here for 17 years. So yeah.
About 13. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so all of my equity. So basically, I stripped all of my equity out of my home in refinancing and reinvested it in the home. So basically, because all of the work is defective, that has proven to be a very bad investment. So I've basically, you know, I've been stripped of equity because of the code violations.
Due to no fault of your own. Let's
right.
Be clear on that.
You know, and here's the thing. This was another one of the arbitrator's rulings. So with 203Ks, the initial interest rate is a little bit higher because the government is taking a greater risk, because the way that they are structured, they basically take all of the renovations you're going to do. They take the current value of your home, and then they estimate what the value will be once the renovations are done. And that is the amount of money that you are allowed to pull out, you know, to pull out. So they're taking a bit of a risk. After you have made at least 6 on-time payments, you are automatically qualified for a rate reduction. I was not able to take advantage of that rate reduction because when I got to the settlement table, one of the very first documents that was presented to me was me certifying that there were no outstanding code violations or liens. I could not sign that because had I signed that, I would have been committing mortgage fraud. And because I couldn't sign it, I could not go forward with the refinance, which would have reduced my interest rate from 5.5 to 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah. Her explanation for refusing till she does not hold him accountable for my inability to refinance. So the way that 203Ks are structured also, 10% of the total amount of your renovation is held in a reserve fund. And that's held in a contingency fund. So, you know, if they open a wall and they discover there's a problem. You know, it's money that's set aside to address the unforeseen problems. at the end of your project, if you have not had to use that money, you have a choice. You can either have that money applied to your principal balance, or you can use that money for additional renovations. So early on in the project, the contractor asked me, he says, if there are funds left in the reserve at the end of the project, how might you want to use them? I said, I would like to replace the two basement windows on the front of the house. Well, the arbitrator in her rulings wrote that I demanded that he provide me with basement windows, though they were not part of the scope of the project. And she determines that he is not liable as a matter of equity because I enjoyed a reduction in the principal balance of my home. Now, she quoted that $8,000 had been applied toward the principal balance, but it was actually $2,800. So she's saying, well, you got an $8,000 reduction in the principal balance of your property. And I'm like, no, I got a $2,300 or $2,800 reduction. And this was not money that was automatically going to go to Mr. Jenkins. This was my own money that I borrowed and set aside and said, okay, if there's a problem, we're going to use this money. If I don't use this money, that's kind of like you going to the ATM and taking out $200 when you're going on a road trip.
Right.
And you decide, oh, you know what? I don't need to use all 200. I only use 50. So I'm going to put $150 back. She's saying, no, you can't put that $150 back. We're going to give it to him. You know, or I'm not going to hold him accountable for your inability to refinance because that $2,800 got put back on your interest on your principal balance. Except she didn't say $2,800, she said $8,000. But if the loan was, you know, my loan was $30,000 and 10% of that is not 10% of $30,000 is not eight. So I don't know how she came to $8,000. Even if it was $8,000 that got put back on the principal balance of my home, it does not change the fact that I was not able to enjoy the interest rate reduction because of his violation of the contract, his breach of the contract, and his violation of law. So anything that she had to hold him accountable for, she did not. She did not hold him accountable. On paper, she holds him accountable for the cost of remediating my kitchen, but she does nothing to compel him to actually make restitution. And he has submitted documents basically saying he can't make restitution. So she's ordering me to pay him.
And really, the problem is at this point, you don't trust this guy to come back in your house.
Of course, I don't trust him. You know, I did not know that he was not truly a contractor until when I refused to tender final payment to him. He said to me, you know, we're having a conversation, and you know, even though I'm saying to him I'm not going to give you your money, we're still being very amicable, you know. I'm standing my ground, but I don't think I necessarily have to be nasty to do it. I'm just saying I'm not going to give you this check until this work is corrected.
Right.
And he said to me, I don't normally tell my customers what my real job is, but I'm going to make an exception to you with you. And I said, your real job? What do you mean your real job? I thought you were a contractor. And he goes, no. I'm a deputy with the Harford County Sheriff's Department.
Oh, he lied and said that, right?
Well, he said he was a deputy with the Harford County Sheriff's Department. So when we got ready to do the hearing, coming up on the hearing was actually held at my home so that the arbitrator could see the defective work. I sent the arbitration administrator an email and I said, listen,
Mr. Jenkins made what I perceive to be a thinly veiled threat by telling me that he's law enforcement. I'm aware that law enforcement officers are armed even when they are off duty. So I would appreciate if he would be ordered to not bring a weapon into my home. So at the hearing, he addressed that, and he was outraged that I would even consider that he was issuing a veiled threat, and he is not law enforcement. I'm a correctional officer.
When you first told me that, that's my perception of it as well, is that you were indirectly threatened.
Yes. Yes. He was using it as a means to intimidate me. So he basically identified himself as law enforcement, though he is not law enforcement. But the interesting thing is prior to now, up until that point, he had concealed that fact.
Right.
At no point in my dealings with him, when he came to do the initial consultation, when we signed the contract, throughout the project, he never disclosed that he was a correctional officer, that he was anything other than a home improvement contractor. When I refused to tender payment to him, is when he acknowledged that or revealed that home improvement is not his primary, that's not his primary occupation.
Right. And
based upon his performance on my project, I mean, this man never showed up, never observed any of the work, never delivered any products. The arbitrator talks about how I complained throughout the project, you know, all that. And I provided her with the emails where I was complaining because I was not happy with the way it was progressing.
I don't know if you ever had any major home improvement prior to this.
No, I have not.
Okay. I can tell you, I've witnessed different things throughout the years, and I can tell you that maybe, you know, the supervisor sometimes is there all day. And if they're not, what they'll usually do, like, they'll come in maybe on a Monday and a Friday just to see how the project is progressing.
And that was the thing. Here's the thing. In the contract, there was actually a notation on the contract that his subcontractor would be managing the day to day. He did say that. I did not take that to mean you're never going to be here.
Right.
And most certainly if he talks about how often I complained about the way the project was managed, yet it never occurred to you that perhaps you should get in your car and drive from Harford County and come over and see what's going on for yourself.
Right. I know I would.
If you're saying that I was this difficult customer who complained, yet it never occurred to you, let me go. I'm supposed to supervise this project. Let me go over and see what is happening. Let me go over and see what she's complaining about. Let me go over and see if the work is not being done correctly. We never did.
At the very least, to prove you wrong, you know, right?
Well, at the very least, because he's contractually required to.
But you see what I'm saying, though, is that...
I get you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to stick, you know, for me, my focus and my points are all drawn from the contract. The contract specifically says that he would supervise the work and the work of all employees, and that he alone would be held liable.
Right.
That is the language of my contract.
Yeah. To me, that the contract is everything. And, you know, the bait.
So what this award says to me and to all consumers is that you can have an ironclad contract. You can have the law on your side, but the division can arbitrarily disregard them both and grant impunity because, you know, I'm sorry, this man, he had his licenses intact. He has suffered no civil penalty. She has not compelled him to make any restitution. She does on paper hold him liable, but
to say, oh, he has an insurance policy and all he has to do is file a claim, but you don't compel him to file a claim.
That makes no sense.
Right. You know, if you're saying that he has this insurance policy that is going to cover this work, and you know that he has endangered me because of his negligence and his deception, then it would seem reasonable that you would say, I'm going to compel you to file a complaint, to file a claim. She does not. She does absolutely nothing to ensure that he will make restitution.
Oh. I'm going to let everybody draw their own conclusions. I think it's pretty obvious, but I want to thank you for joining me, but before I say goodbye to you, I would like to ask, at the end of the day, what would you like your own personal resolution? I know we've talked about this, but just to summarize it, what would you like to see happen, and what would you like to see happen for others?
What I would like to see happen is I would like to see the law enforced. I would like to see this contractor held liable. I would like accountability. I want him to, you know, he violated the law. Apply the law. I'm not asking for anything above and beyond what the law states. That's all I'm asking. I'm asking to be made whole, and I'm asking that he be held accountable for his violation, his clear violation of Maryland law. And at this juncture, I also believe there needs to be some accountability from the arbitrator. And she's got qualified immunity, so nothing's going to happen to her. But this assistant attorney general is a civil servant. She is in a position of public trust. Her job is to enforce the law. And she's using her authority to do the complete opposite. So yes, she needs to be held accountable as well. You know, I'm not advocating for anybody losing their license. I'm not advocating for anybody going to jail. But the law is the law is the law. And it did not convey to the division the discretion to decide who's deserving and who is not. And I want the law to be strengthened and some clarification added to it so that no other consumer goes through what I've gone through, because I hate to think what would have happened if I had been a single mother, or I had been a retiree, or I had been disabled. This could have turned out really, really badly. I mean, it's worse than it has for me.
Right.
But, you know, what has happened has happened. You know, at this point, I'm trying to pick up the scraps of my life and to move forward and rebuild. But I want to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else, because this has been a very blatant matter of misconduct and violation of public trust. You know, the contractor, as a correctional officer, is in a position of public trust, that he feels that he should be able to violate the law with impunity. That this arbitrator, who is an attorney, who quite honestly for almost two decades worked in an industry where she ensured access to justice for everyone, yet in this instance, she doesn't feel that I'm worthy of it. As an attorney, she has violated the rules of professional conduct. The assistant attorney general most certainly has. No citizen should be treated the way I've been treated.
I agree 100%.
So, you know, the big thing for me, yes, I most certainly want to be made whole, but I also want to make sure that there are mechanisms in place. There has to be some mechanism for checks and balances so that this does not happen to someone else. You know, I should not be literally fighting the Consumer Protection Division for my legal rights.
They're put there to be our friends. Not our enemy.
Well, No, I think they are. I don't think they're put there to be, you know, I like to be kind of deliberate and intentional in my choice of words. So they're not put there to be my friend. They're put there to enforce the law.
Okay, I agree.
And if you are on the right side of the law, then yeah, they're your friend. But in my case, they have been adversarial. You know, it's very interesting. The contractor, his response to the complaint was stricken by the court, you know, because he did not really respond. He kind of did a non-response and overarching, oh, I deny everything. And he basically said, and until she complied, you know, and she's talking about her unsafe living conditions, but if she would just comply with this award, it would all be good. That was essentially his defense. And the court struck his defense. Well, had the division not intervened, the case would be over. So at this point, I'm not fighting the contractor who defrauded me. I'm fighting the state agency that has denied me the legal protections of Maryland law. And that should never be.
Yeah. I mean, what else can I say? And other than I really hope that, you know, your pursuit of happiness continues. Because this is just a mess.
I'm bruised, but I'm not broken. You know, I'm bruised. I'm not broken. And, you know, one thing that I kind of hold on to is never give in, never give up.
And you haven't. And I definitely respect that.
But it has come at a cost. It has come at a significant cost.
Yeah, but what other choice did you have, right?
I did not have a choice. You know, I have some people who, you know, one of my neighbors, pardon the vernacular, she was like, man, you've been fighting your ass off. And I just kind of looked at her and she meant it as a compliment. And I was like, listen, I didn't have a choice. I'm literally fighting for the life that I created for myself.
That's right.
I am fighting for the life that I created for myself. And it has been greatly diminished by the Consumer Protection Division.
And Baltimore County Code Enforcement.
Yeah, that's too.
Let's not forget them because
And let's not forget Maryland Home Improvement Commission, because when I filed a complaint with them, they responded to my complaint. They repeatedly responded to my complaint with letters stating that I had filed a claim against the guarantee fund. And I would respond and say, no, I did not file a claim against the guarantee fund. I filed a complaint. And I actually had to, it was not until I reached out to my county executive and said, hey, I'm having a problem with the Maryland Home Improvement Commission. I filed a complaint. They keep responding saying that I filed a claim against the guarantee fund and they're not going to investigate. I'm simply asking for the reason you are refusing to investigate. And after several rounds, finally someone from Baltimore County contacted Maryland Home Improvement Commission, and the Maryland Home the chief called me and very rudely told me that the reason that they were not taking action against my case, any investigation again, you know, was because, again, I had an arbitration agreement. They're like, well, you have an arbitration agreement. I'm like, okay, well, why did you keep sending me letters stating that I had filed a claim against the guarantee fund if the reason that you're refusing to investigate is my arbitration agreement? And the only response he could give is, well, that is the form letter that our secretary sends out. And I said, well, can I get a letter stating that you are refusing to investigate because of the arbitration agreement, if that is the reason? I'm not arguing. You know, I'm not arguing. I'm not trying to say, well, you should. I'm simply asking, can I get correspondence from you that reflects the reason that you are not taking action? I never got it.
Hmm.
I never got it. So literally, Baltimore County, I filed a complaint. I got penalized. Maryland Home Improvement Commission, they didn't penalize me, but they didn't do anything to help me. Now, and
the
let me make this point.
Okay.
The Consumer Protection Act requires that every state agency enforce the law to the full extent of their jurisdiction. So from my perspective, if I'm coming to the Maryland Home Improvement Commission and I'm saying this contractor misrepresented the licensing of his subcontractor and he didn't pull permits and he breached the contract and he has defective work and he engaged in negligence that has endangered me. If the law, and it does, states that they cannot, that is current Maryland law, that if a consumer or a homeowner files a complaint with them and they have an arbitration agreement, Maryland Home Improvement Commission is not allowed to take action. However, one would assume that they would at least refer the matter to the Attorney General's office. They did not. When I filed a complaint with Baltimore County, they took action. They penalized me, but they also did not refer this matter to the Consumer Protection Division. So you've got all of these agencies that not only failed to help me, some of them penalized me, but none of them enforced the CPA to the full extent of their jurisdiction. And at a minimum, they should have been saying, hey, we had this complaint that came in. We believe that this contractor may have violated the CPA. Can you investigate? No one did that.
I wonder if that's a matter of ignorance or laziness.
I think it's a combination of both. And I believe it was ignorance, laziness, and a lack of caring.
Yeah. Like I said, and you said this to me the other day, you went for help and they made things worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And had you just...
Because even now, and then when I wrote to all of the senators, I also wrote to Baltimore County. And Baltimore County's response was to forward my message to the circuit court.
For what reason did they give?
They didn't give one. I got a response that basically said, sorry about your luck, I'm going to forward this to the Baltimore County Circuit Court.
I mean, I have to tell you, like, what you were saying about the form letter, that's basically been what my experience has been throughout the last 2 years when I've sent messages to the government, if I got anything back.
Well, you know, I'm just, like I said, I am just very profoundly disappointed with every agency that I have reached out to. And as a citizen, the message that has been conveyed very loud and very clearly is you're not valued. We don't care about you. I know that I'm a public servant and I'm supposed to service the public, but it has devolved into a bureaucracy where people are abusing their authority, and they're really not helping consumers. They're not helping the citizens. You know, and like I said, there was a time that I wanted to put Maryland in my rearview mirror. I wanted nothing to do with Maryland. But, you know, here's the thing. This is my home. It's my home of choice. I'm not going to run away. I'm actually going to, you know, what they have done is they've created an advocate. I'm going to fight. And I'm going to use my voice for those who don't have a voice.
I love that.
I'm going to be part of the solution. It's like I know firsthand what the problems is, you know, what the problem is, so, and where they lie. So, you know, any elected official who has the
the authority and the ability to ensure that this does not happen again to anyone, I'm willing to work with them to ensure that it does not happen to someone else. You know, like I said, most certainly, I want to be made whole. It's not this altruistic, you know, it's not completely altruistic. But this is not just not about me. This shouldn't have happened to anyone. This should not happen ever again.
I agree. Now, I was thinking earlier what you said about how the different departments weren't communicating with one another.
Yeah.
I think that is, if a delegate or a state senator were to, I'm losing my train of thought. It's getting later.
I would hope that they would take up that call. And the one senator who has expressed concern.
Sponsor the bill. That's what I was looking for. Sponsor a bill.
I am going to make, you know, again, I understand, you know, and here's the thing. In saying they didn't do anything to help me, I want to reiterate that I understand that they're not allowed to intervene in cases before the judiciary. I get that. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but I get it. And I have to respect that boundary and the separation of the judiciary from the legislature. I get that.
Even if they're disregarding the law.
But unfortunately, the way the current law is set up, they're pretty powerless to do anything. So I'm going to ask this senator to sponsor a bill that would strengthen and clarify consumer protections and would allow a mechanism when a citizen feels that there is misconduct and there is, you know, they're being denied their rights. There should be some mechanism to complain to your elected official, and there should be some mechanism to take action before irreparable harm has occurred. Because from where I'm sitting right now, amongst all of these boxes, as I am trying to pack up my home, it should not be after irreparable harm has been done. You know, can we prevent that harm? There needs to be some mechanism for them to intervene in cases of misconduct where a state agency or a state official is refusing to enforce the law or is abusing their authority. There should be some mechanism for them to step in and say, okay, this isn't intervening in the case, but I am going to address the misconduct.
Especially when it's this flagrant or gross.
Yeah, it's very blatant. This is blatant. This is very blatant. And what the division is doing, they're using my lack of knowledge, my inability to afford an attorney, to basically obstruct my efforts to seek vacature of this award. Because if they truly feel that they have conveyed and applied the law and they have done what they were supposed to do, they have enforced the law, they have applied the law, and this were a matter of my simply disagreeing, then that is when you trust the judiciary, you trust this judge to look at this case and say, no, Ms. Collins, they applied the law. But they're trying to prevent me from ever getting to that point. They don't want this to ever get before a judge. They're trying to get my case dismissed on a technicality. And they are stepping in using their authority, seeking confirmation of an award that contravenes the law. And I'm sorry, but my understanding of the rules of professional conduct basically says that anything that prejudices the administration of justice, well, that's what they're doing, and there needs to be accountability.
I think that's a great place to end this conversation, and I really want to thank you for joining me on the very first episode. So,
well, I thank you for inviting me. I thank you for using your platform to get the word out on this.
I really hope it does something. I'm not doing this for my own entertainment or whatever. I really want something to come of this, whether that is to get your story onto a bigger platform, where some, you know, that message will be amplified and there's a resolution and you know, I want this to actually something to come of this, not just a show.
I hope it is a catalyst for change. And I hope it is a catalyst for positive change that actually does protect consumers. You know, at this point, like I said, I do not believe, you know, I may be wrong about this. I do not have any irrefutable proof of it. But I just do not believe that I am the first person that this has happened to. I think most people would have given up by now. I'm just too damn stubborn to give up.
I love it. And you're, ma'am, I want to thank you again also for teaching me a lot of things. I learned a lot from speaking to you over this past week.
Well, I'm glad, you know, I'm hoping that something positive comes out of this. If not for me, you know, for the next person. But I, you know, I'm hoping that it does effect change.
I guess we're just going to have to see. And if it does, would you like to come back on and give us an update?
Oh, most certainly.
Okay, great. And I will, along with this, can I point people to your Twitter page and your website? Or actually, go ahead and tell people what it is.
You can send them to my Instagram. So it's my photography Instagram. It is Creative Chemistry, CREATIVEKIMESTRY. They can go to my Twitter. That is Creative Chemistry as well, as CREATIVKIMESTRY. Had to drop the E because Twitter kind of,
right.
They have a different naming convention, but Creative Chemistry, you know, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me Facebook, and you can also find me on Twitter.